Hey, good morning. What's going on?
You get any sleep last night?
I couldn't sleep. Like, I mean, I slept and then I sat there in bed for like an hour looking at my phone thinking, I guess I'm up, you know? So when you have young kids, you just sort of wake up early and that's the deal. But I'm pretty refreshed though.
What's Kirk Cousins thinking today?
Your tweet last night on him was pretty good. I'll give you that.
I don't even remember what I tweeted.
It was just it was a real simple one you had last night. I'll tell you, I just had it.
Yeah.
Super simple, real, like, to the point. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Oh, poor Kirk Cousins. LOL.
Yeah.
Man.
I think that may have been this morning for all I know. I just, I try not to react too much to it in the moment. I wanted to just sit there. I was obviously doing other work and stuff, and I thought, let this one marinate for a little bit. And, you know, of course, people have brought out the Jordan Love example and said, hey, you know, look, this is a great example. Obviously, the Packers have done this sort of thing for years. It's worked out. Nobody's questioning the Love pick now. All that's fine and right and good and fair, right? And it's not like Kirk Cousins isn't coming off this you know, season-ending injury and on the back half of his career. But why are you making sure, you know, why are you in giving him this kind of contract in the first place and then using the eighth pick, not on a weapon for him, not as a way to bolster your defense, but for his eventual replacement? This would have been a lot more understandable had Cousins joined the team last year, you know, if we were in that kind of a situation a year into the contract. And, you know, the other thing is Penix turns 24 next month. It's not like Jordan Love, who I think was 20, turning 21 at the time when he came out and was drafted by the Packers. And, you know, Love went at the end of round one. There's a difference between the, you know, whatever, the 26th pick and the eighth selection overall. So I do have my questions. I like Penix. I like him in a dome. I mean, there's some things that make some sense about it, but there's some things that still leave me scratching my head.
Eric, did they overdraft him at 8? Did they overdraft J.J. McCarthy at 10, the Vikings? Did Bo Nix get overdrafted by the Broncos at 12? Just because of the need for
quarterback. Ultimately, you have to ask, will they be worth those selections? I mean, Penix wouldn't have gone too much farther. I don't think he makes it past the Raiders at 13. So whatever that's worth, knowing that he was going to be gone and there was probably not much opportunity for Atlanta to manipulate the board and slide back a few spots and still ensure they were going to get him. So from that standpoint, I understand why they made the pick. If they wanted him, they probably needed to take him exactly there and nowhere else. But, you know, to that question and to the McCarthy question, who knows? We won't find out. I will say McCarthy, I think, landed in the best quarterback situation of all the quarterbacks, even Caleb last night. I mean, the Bears are putting something interesting together for sure. Offense looks totally different. I like what they're building there. But I think Minnesota with Kevin O'Connell as play caller, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hawkinson, once he's back healthy again, you know, that's a pretty good setup for a young quarterback, especially one who had a great surrounding cast at Michigan and worked well within it. So, you know, I mean, that's the best thing about it is that he'll have a great chance to thrive given who's around him. And look, the kid's not bad at all. He's just, he doesn't have quite the full resume that I think some of these other guys do.
I got to tell you, Eric, as I was watching the draft last night and I was watching all these offensive players go off the board, I'm like, this is good as a Browns fan that wants them to take someone on the defensive side of the ball. I can't think of a better way for maybe you could have had, I don't know, only two or three defensive players get drafted in the first round. But I think this sets up good for a team like the Browns that if they need a defensive player and they're sitting where they are in the second round at 54, yesterday was good for the Browns.
Yeah, no, I think you absolutely can look at the top and who's still available and say, okay, you know, Kool-Aid McKinstry could have been a first-round pick if he didn't go. Cooper DeJean could have been a first-round pick. He didn't go. Johnny Newton. And even if these players don't get all the way to 54 or within range of a short move up, it's still pushing other players down. Marshawn Nyland, you know, I had people telling me the Western Michigan pass rusher was probably going to go somewhere in the top 40 picks. So, again, another player sort of borderline first-round pick. So, yeah, I think it sets up pretty nicely for probably the first 15 or 20 picks in the round. I think are going to be, you know, feeling really good about their position. And then the next handful after that, there's still going to be some interesting depth. So Yeah, there's been this big run on offensive linemen. We had six quarterbacks drafted, a fair number of receivers as well. You know, obviously the defensive talent in this draft wasn't as highly regarded as we've seen in recent years, but I'm with you. I think this sets up really nicely, and that's why I can't kill the Bills for trading back, because I think they're going to still end up getting a relatively commensurate player to who they would have gotten at 27 or 8 or 9 or wherever they were picking.
Eric Edholm joining us from NFL.com. To follow up that whole thought, there was only one defensive tackle taken yesterday.
Yeah.
I think it was seven wide receivers in the first round. When the Browns, let's just say wherever they are on the board, if they move up or whatever from 54, do you think there will be a better talent at wide receiver there? Be way down, obviously. Or would there be, you know, one of the a higher-ranked defensive tackle who you think would be a better pick all the way around? Is there enough talent at wide receiver that you think somebody good will be there?
Yeah, good question. I mean, Newton's injury has kind of – I think that's what sort of prevented him from being a first-round pick. But I assume he'll go sort of early in round two. Maybe he's not there. Chris Jenkins from Michigan, I think the NFL is pretty high on him. Of course, his dad played for the Panthers. You know, he was in a rotation at Michigan. Didn't always get to display the individual talent because he was sort of kept on a pitch count because of how many players they had there. But, you know, scouts are high on him too. I would say it's a 50-50 shot if somebody like that's available. Then you have Mason Smith from LSU and Ruk Ororo from Clemson and a few more guys who I think would be perfectly reasonable picks, the middle or back half of the second round, absolutely. The receiving group is pretty good, too. I mean, I like Keon Coleman a lot. Maybe he's too much like David Bell. Maybe that's not a real option for them. You know, Malachi Corley's interesting, but, you know, a little bit of a slot type of projection. I think Roman Wilson, same thing. So, to me, I mean, even though there are some tempting receivers there, I think the D-tackle direction would be the most sensible unless there's a big run in those first, 10, 12 picks of round two. Then obviously it thins out. But if they're spread out a little bit more and maybe one or two of those guys I mentioned are available, that would be my route because it drops off after that, in my opinion.
Eric, it's weird for us here in Cleveland. First of all, I mean, the draft for years was our Super Bowl. And now we sit and we have nothing last night. It was just like, and then the Cavs got blown out before that, but that's another story for another day. But, you know, so we're sitting back and we're looking at this, and then you're saying to yourself, you know, Andrew Berry did a pretty good job with what he's got, considering he doesn't have the first-round picks because of Deshaun Watson. Just give me your general feel on the Browns organization, where they're at right now, and how they set themselves up for this draft, knowing that they didn't have a first-round pick.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's, you know, the Judy trade was a big move this offseason, and maybe it got a little washed under just based on all the activity that's happened. But I think clearly they're counting on big things from him and, you know, a couple of smart additions at linebacker if for nothing else than depth and versatility there. So that kind of helps too. And, you know, I mean, you're not going to be able to check off every box. Obviously, if you make a big move for a quarterback, if you make one of these whopper moves, you know, you're going to be shy of picks. But, you know, I mean, the way things have kind of unfolded, I think they're sitting, I don't know about sitting pretty, but I think they're sitting in a good spot right now. And I think they feel pretty comfortable with, you know, their needs and then the talent left on the board kind of, you know, meshing and somebody I think will emerge and they'll be in a nice spot for this draft. So, I mean, just big picture. I mean, I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know. It's going to be so fascinating to see how this Deshaun thing works out, if it does at all. I mean, and that's the big picture. But as far as the draft is concerned, I mean, I think they can still come away with a fairly decent haul even without that first rounder.
Eric Edholm joining us from NFL.com. Did it surprise you that there were no trades until Minnesota moved up one spot to 10?
I thought there would be like one, maybe two trades in the top 10. When I kind of early on in the process, I thought, wow, this is setting up for like all these quarterbacks. And, you know, I mean, this is, you know, some receivers who are considered, like, you could make the case that in certain draft classes, Harrison, Neighbors, and Adunze all could have been the number one guy on the board had the other ones not been in this class. So to me, that looked like a happy hunting ground. I thought, wow, this could really – but in the last few days and weeks when I called around, it felt like there were some cold feet and there were some teams up top asking for really big offers. Like New England had a pie-in-the-sky trade package imagined in their head. That was the only thing that was going to get them to move off their spot. So they weren't in play. Arizona – probably had similar designs, and they were really high on Marvin too. So, you know, there was only so much they were willing to do. And ultimately, yeah, it ended up being a couple of incremental moves, small little jumps, you know, and I thought the Bears would want to move out of 9, considering they only had 4 picks entering the weekend. They've already made half of them. So I guess they're kind of just saying, let's get 2 elite talents and hope that works. So, yeah, it ended up being a little bit of a dud from that standpoint, but yeah, I guess it's understandable if teams were, you know, putting a 40% over market value price on these picks, and that's kind of how I think it played out.
Eric Edholm joining us from NFL.com. Eric, if you're Andrew Berry tonight and beyond here in the draft, are you looking to make picks, or are you looking to pick guys off of other rosters for maybe some late round picks if that's possible?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I think the big picture of this draft is that after round 4, round 5, of course there will be picks after that who succeed, but just the general consensus is because of NIL and because there are fewer underclassmen coming out, taking advantage of these opportunities and staying in college or transferring to another school, maybe getting one last shot somewhere else, you know, especially when you see Michael Penix transfer from Indiana, Bo Nix transfer from Auburn and have success. Obviously, there's a playbook here. It's affected the draft depth. And I think after about the 150th pick, if you hit on anything after that, good for you. You found a diamond in the rough. It's not like there aren't going to be helpful players after that. But, you know, this is maybe where a team that, you know, that doesn't have those draft picks and they see that one player they like, you know, call the Browns because, you know, there might be a deal to be made or something like that. There are a few other teams that fall into that category. I wouldn't be opposed at all to that approach if you feel like you can get a bird in the hand, something that's a little bit more of a known quantity, even if they're older or more expensive or whatnot.
Eric, thank you for your time. Great to have you with us today, and good luck the rest of the draft. Get some sleep.
Thanks, Eric.
Tonight's your night. You guys get to enjoy it. I hope
we are pumped, man. Oh. Round 2, that's all us. Look at us.
We can't wait, buddy. Thanks, Eric. Eric Edholm joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.